Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hej och välkomna till Kunglig koll, podcasten för dig som älskar kungligheter. Sara Eriksson här i vanlig ordning och i annan vanlig ordning så brukar även Roger Lundgren sitta vid min sida. Den här podcasten är dock lite annorlunda upplagd. Det är nämligen så att Roger, som annars när han inte spelar in podcast med mig, jobbar som chefredaktör för Kungliga magasinet, där även jag då jobbar och skriver för. Han har varit ute på ett litet kungligt äventyr. Och nu kanske Roger kommer att bli lite trött på mig när han hör det här, för jag ska gärna dramatisera ord och förstärka dem lite grann. Äventyr kanske var att ta i. Men han har varit med om ett väldigt spännande och intressant kungligt möte här i Stockholm. Det är nämligen så att Roger har träffat prins Eremias Kjellaise, som är född 1960. Och han är ju då sonson till Etiopiens legendariska kejsare Haile Selassie, lejonet av Juda, som gick bort år 1974. Prins Eremias är överhuvud för det etiopiska Crown Council, och Roger fick som sagt möjlighet att träffa honom i Stockholm för ett samtal när han nyligen besökte vår kära huvudstad. Och intervjun är ju då givetvis på engelska, men det är väldigt kul att vi har lyckats få ett sånt unikt och spännande material till våran podcast. Så jag hoppas att ni tycker att det här är en liten annorlunda rolig grej i podden och att ni precis som vi tycker att det här mötet är väldigt spännande. Så det är min lilla introduktion till Rogers kungliga möte. Varsågoda.
So your highness, very much welcome back to Sweden. And you were here a year ago and now you're back again. And why have you been invited back to Stockholm?
Thank you for this interview. I came back this year again for the Stockholm Cultural Awards, and it was a wonderful evening attended by very prominent scientists who were mathematicians who were prize winners this year. But more importantly, I had the opportunity to also further my conversations which I started last year regarding charitable activities for Ethiopia.
Because you, sir, are head of the Ethiopian Crown Council, how would you describe what that is and what you do?
Well, the Ethiopian Crown Council is really the last institution left in terms of the imperial family. We have been in exile, as you know, from 1974. So in the past year, many things have changed. And we see our role as being more involved and integrated in Ethiopia and contribute to Ethiopia's development and also help with cultural and heritage preservation.
Is there also within the work that you do sort of like a monarchist movement to bring back the monarchy to your country?
Well, there are some people who believe that the monarchy has a role to play in terms of unifying the country. I think in terms of the politics, things are much more open in the past year than they've been in the past. And if it's going to be a democratic society, I'm sure those people will also have a voice. So there is definitely a movement and support for that.
What are your Imperial Highness's views on constitutional monarchies like the one that we have here in Sweden?
In my own perspective, I think, you know, although the final decision is going to be the Ethiopian people's decision, I think monarchy has played a great role in terms of stabilizing society, in terms of continuation, in terms of providing unity. It's not involved in day-to-day administration and acts as a guardian of the country's, you know, history and integrity and social fabric. And as you can see in Sweden, it's very popular. And I think in many ways also it can curb the sort of extremities of politicians who have a very short-term perspective, whereas monarchy tends to look at the long-term overall.
I know that when you were in Sweden last year, you had the pleasure to meet the King and the Queen of Sweden. What were your impressions about their majesties?
I was incredibly impressed how very simple and human they were, how much concern they showed not only for people in Sweden, but all around the world. And I'm, you know, tremendously impressed by all the work they do in terms of raising awareness to issues and also contributing to helping firsthand through their charitable organizations, many worthwhile causes.
Do you stay in touch with other royal families around the world?
Yes, as much as possible we do. We often get invited to events and other events where we're mutually together. So, absolutely. Unfortunately, I haven't kept up as much with the African royals as I should, and I hope to be doing more of that in the coming year.
Because you live in the United States,
yes.
But you do also travel a lot around the world and to Ethiopia, I guess, several times a year.
Yes, we've been very fortunate to do that. And increasingly now we're going to Ethiopia and hope to be doing more of that, in fact, spending more time there. So in that sense, we've had the opportunity last year to meet with members of the United Arab Emirates families and the Savoyas. So we hope to continue to build these relationships.
We all know also that there are very sad days in Ethiopia right now because of a horrible plane crash that took a lot of people's lives. What are your views about this sad occasion?
It's very sad. And in fact, our thoughts and prayers are with the Ethiopian people and those all over the world who lost family members. And I was incredibly actually amazed by how many people and nationalities it affected. It just shows you what a codependent world we live in and how much more closer we have become than what people would normally think. I think there were, I don't know how many nationalities who lost their lives there, and I'm particularly saddened to hear that 4 Swedes had lost their lives. So also I feel very saddened by that.
Ethiopia is a beautiful country, but a country that has gone through a lot of problems and heartaches throughout the years. How do you see upon your country's future?
I'm very hopeful. I think we have a very visionary prime minister who definitely wants to bring people together and make the appropriate changes and is dedicated to bringing democracy. And I think the world is also very supportive of his work. I just hope he continues the path of reform and bringing people together and, more importantly, reconciling with our history, because we haven't had that opportunity. And I think, as you just mentioned, it's been a tragic and a very eventful and conflict-ridden country for the past 40 years. So it's also very important, and I hope he starts to focus on building national reconciliation.
And considering history, I know that you get this question quite a lot, and it's easy to understand why, because your late grandfather was one of the most famous people who has ever lived on the on Earth, Emperor Haile Selassie. What are your memories of your late grandfather?
My memories of him are his incredible discipline, how much he devoted to the vision and cause he believed in, and how much he did for the Ethiopia. I mean, I don't think Ethiopians realize that he brought the country from a donkey age to the jet age. And I hope in time people will begin to realize it. But in my, as a child, from a child's perspective, what I remember the most is his love for animals, particularly dogs and horses, and also the time he spent with us. So we were very blessed to have some quality time with him.
When you did have quality time with him, what would your children do?
Well, we would visit the animals in the palace. We go also different parts of Ethiopia and visit there. And when he had quiet time, oftentimes he'd walk with us, the children, to different places. And then also he took us by car wherever he went in terms of visiting hospitals or patients or opening new factories. So I remember those snippets of time we spent together.
Is it true that your grandfather had pet lions?
Absolutely. I wouldn't call them pets, but there were lions in the palace, and they weren't indoors or anything like that, but definitely would visit them. You could hear them roaring in the background.
Were you afraid of them?
No, not really.
But your grandfather would receive a lot of visits from all over the world when he was the emperor. Do you, I mean, you were very young in those days, but do you remember any of the visitors from Europe or America that would come to Ethiopia?
Definitely, I remember the visit of Marshal Tito, because I was a recipient of a transistor radio as a gift, and I was very impressed that he would think of the children. So that I have a very particular memory of. And then I remember also the visit of Her Majesty the Queen. And I was old enough, maybe 6 or 7. And I remember the parade in the carriage when she came into the palace and all the ceremony that attended it. So that's as a child, that's a very big highlight in your memory.
And when you think about the fact that the Queen is still on the throne in England, how do you view that?
It's amazing. She's been very blessed to be a queen for such a long time and to be able to serve her people without a flinch. What an example she sets as a standard for all royalty.
And then, of course, there came darker days in the 70s. What are your memories of the revolution, and when did you leave the country?
I was fortunately out earlier, before the revolution started. I was back in school in England. I was attending a boarding school at that time. So I was very fortunate to have missed the tragic parts on the ground, but that doesn't mean that it wasn't a traumatic period for me or other members of the family who were out, because I remember the trauma of hearing of the imprisonment of my family, of the death of my grandfather, of the death of other family members, of where the country was going daily from bad to worse. So all these were very tragic memories that I'm sure has affected me on some level. And also I consider myself very fortunate that I didn't go through to the extreme of what other members of the family went through in Ethiopia.
At what point did the relationship between the imperial family and the state of Ethiopia start to grow again?
Well, after 1991, when the communist or the military government fell, which was really a very brutal government. And this is a term we still haven't come to terms with. And we were allowed as Ethiopian citizens to return. And of course, the government allowed for the reinterment of my grandfather in 2000, which was the first time I ever went back after so many years. So cautiously and progressively, things have improved after that.
What was the feeling the first time you stood on Ethiopian ground again?
What a beautiful country Ethiopia is, firstly. Mm. I was just incredibly touched. How people have maintained their culture. And then it was mixed feeling, to be honest. I mean, you know, what makes a country is there are people you remember, the people you know. And after so many years, the people we knew had all died or, you know, been in exile. And it was a whole other generation, a whole other society. So definitely creates a sense of mixed feeling in you.
And when we look back about things, what it was like in the 50s and especially in the 60s, and also considering that in Jamaica, the Rasta community with Bob Marley, they called your grandfather the Lion of Judah, and they would see him as a god. And what are your opinions about all of that movement?
Well, you know, I understand it in terms of black pride and black identity, in the sense that they saw in His Majesty the dignity of Africans, and this has been a history that was denied to people who had always been represented through the prism of slavery. So for them to find these rare heroes, especially in kingship, is perfectly understandable why they gravitated towards Ethiopia, towards His Majesty, towards Ethiopia's history of independence and so forth. But His Majesty he was a very devout Orthodox Christian who never claimed to be God and told them that because he views that as sacrilegious. But I'm sure he also understood the psychology behind the support and love that Jamaicans expressed for him. Mm. And I view it the same way. I was there, 2-3 years ago to celebrate the 50th commemoration visit of His Majesty, and we were received with enormous love and, hospitality. It was also very gratifying to see an Ethiopian Orthodox Church that's been established by His Majesty, as well as a high school, flourishing. So these are the things somehow that he left as memories of his visit there. So these are two important institutions, education and faith.
So you are very much, Your Royal, Your Imperial Highness, an international man. You travel all the time, and I guess your heart belongs to Ethiopia. Do you plan to move home to Ethiopia again?
Absolutely. I think home is home, and I feel there are better times ahead, and I think there are a lot of hope for Ethiopia. I think I see a bright future, and we have experience living abroad for so many years. And I think it's time to also spend quality time back home.
And finally, sir, there are a lot of Ethiopians living in Sweden. Do you have any message to them?
Absolutely. I think the Ethiopian diaspora, whether it's in Sweden or the United States or throughout Europe, have a big role to play in contributing to the development of Ethiopia. And I think the opening is there today. There is a government that is willing to engage the diaspora to get involved. And I hope they will take this opportunity because Ethiopia has been on many crossroads before. And as we've witnessed, it's not always been the right road we've taken. So I think everybody's contribution for charting the future course or the future road ahead is very important. And no one, not the government or no individual, can do it alone. It has to be a collective effort. And I believe the diaspora has their contribution to play.
With that, Your Imperial Highness, thank you so very much for this nice interview.
Thank you very much again, and it's wonderful to be back in Sweden.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.